It stuck out in my mind how important that job was. And I developed a lot of respect for journalists, specifically TV journalists.
And I realized after I did some stories that made the university mad that it was a lot of fun to piss people off.
The sense that what you write has a chance to really sort of shape policy, and that policy really will determine sort of whether people, you know what they're getting for their tax dollars.
WGN Radio News, a look back at the day that was, and a deeper look into issues and stories with Andrea Dollars and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Good evening, happy Tuesday to you. We're on a Tuesday tonight. 720 WGN, it's Andrea and the reporters. We'll take you all the way up to White Sox baseball in the desert. I'm so excited to have on our panel tonight Heather Chiron, Gregory Pratt, and Courtney Hall. You've heard their names before, you've seen them before, and they are all in studio. Boy, we had a great time talking in the green room before, and if only people could hear what we say in the green room before we go on the air. But we'll try and bring you some of that tonight, though, too. Some of our backstories, and we're going to talk a little bit about news of the day and how you all got into this fun and crazy and ever-changing business of ours, and greatest stories you've ever chased, and stories that you're still chasing, and what drives and inspires each of you. So thank you guys for being here tonight.
Thank you.
All right, why don't we start? We'll start with my right, with my colleague at WGN-TV, Courtney Hall, CLTV anchor and WGN-TV anchor and reporter. Tell us about yourself, Courtney.
All right, well, thank you for having me. I'm from Chicago, born and raised. Love that you have this show, Andrea. So thank you so much for having me on. I started my career in Champaign, Illinois, and I've been in Chicago like 7 years now, so it's crazy. So happy to be here. I also, in addition to doing WGN and CLTV, I host for the Chicago Bulls.
Yes,
too. So you could see me everywhere. I'm all over the place.
Have you always been just a huge Bulls fan?
Yeah. Just okay. Being born and raised in Chicago and being like a 90s Bulls fan.
Yes,
like
yes.
That was the heyday, of course.
Favorite Bulls player ever?
Michael Jordan.
Yeah, you have to, right? You have to.
Yeah, I love Scottie Pippen, too.
I knew I was getting old when, in the Derrick Rose era, and the kids came trick-or-treating, and they're in their Bulls, and I said, oh, you guys, Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen? They're like, no, we're all Derrick Rose. I'm like, oh, God,
yeah,
I'm getting old. I'm getting old, but I love watching you host the games,
and you
and your partner are wonderful, and
thank you
have
so
the
much.
Coolest red shoes I've ever seen. Those red boots rock.
I've developed quite the collection of red boots.
That's awesome. Well, welcome. Thank you, Courtney. Greg Pratt, no stranger to covering City Hall. You work for the Chicago Tribune.
Yeah, I get to spend every day at City Hall.
Yeah, and you say that with such, you know, enthusiasm and vigor.
You know, it's a lot of fun, actually.
Uh-huh.
Every single day, there's something new. There's some days that are terrible and awesome, where you have 5 press conferences in a row, which has actually happened. The last one, I think people were starting to get annoyed with each other from being back-to-back. There was almost a fight between an alderman and Ricky Hendon, former state senator, which
sure.
was awesome.
Yes, yeah. The fight or the covering?
Well, the fight. You know, I wish they had thrown hands, to be honest.
Right. Well, thank you for being here. We appreciate it, Greg. And Heather Chiron, you know her from The Daily Line. She's the managing editor and City Hall reporter.
That's so right.
You're at City Hall all the time, too.
Yeah, I sit about 10 feet away from Greg most days. I'm applying for hazard pay. No, I'm joking.
Tell them about my Diet Coke problem.
Yes.
Uh-oh. The truth is going to come out now.
He drinks so much Diet Coke, and he eats so much frozen food.
Oh, my goodness.
It's a lot.
And no!
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot. The mom in me wants to be like, sweetheart, can I get you some vegetables?
Right.
Like, what about a fruit? Have you ever tried a fruit?
Right. It's just easier to pick up something frozen or something not too healthy.
I'm busy.
In our business, anyway, right? One of our first shows, I was telling you guys in the green room, it turned into stories that we've covered, and then best food at 4 o'clock in the morning, and you weighed in on that too, Greg. You said a taco place.
Taco Naso in a little village on Western and Cermak.
Okay, you have a competition with Taco Burrito Palace number 2.
You know, that's probably worth checking out, too.
Yeah. I mean, on the far northwest side, it's Taco Burrito King right off the Kennedy.
There you go.
That's the one I know.
Yes.
Yeah, right?
I mean, that's, you know, classic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we need our nourishment when we're covering these stories at all hours of the night. Heather, thank you for being here. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so I want to talk a little bit about some news of the day. I mean, the mayor's race is the biggest news in the city right now. Lori Lightfoot just spent $300,000 on her new TV commercials. What do you guys think of the commercials? And they seem very soft, you know, with not a lot of mudslinging. Her daughter, for those who haven't seen it yet, why don't you set it up for us?
Well, personally, so the ad is called Focus, and it juxtaposes a very serious Lori Lightfoot sitting in her living room with, she starts to talk about how she's running for mayor, and she's running because nobody is going to distract her from the important issues. And as she's saying that, her 11-year-old daughter, Vivian, starts to sneak up into the frame, and she's tiptoeing, and she does a little wave at the camera with her hand, and as she's talking, as Lightfoot starts talking about corruption and Ed Burke and affordable housing, she's playing the trumpet. She's doing the floss, which is a dance.
Yeah,
that,
yeah. Which we were all trying to do. Right. And you, I think, won, Courtney. I'm telling you.
I was the closest, only because kids love that dance, and they're always doing it at the United Center. So
I think that it's fun, though. I think it works. I mean, do you guys think viewers are seeing this, and this will work in her favor?
Well, I think it opens up a door that you don't normally see of Chicago mayors. For example, probably the most famous commercial of Rahm Emanuel's tenure was when he put the sweater vest on.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
And, you know, basically said, you know, I know I can be hard to take. I hear you. I will do better next time. And that's a very different closing message than what we're hearing from Lori Lightfoot, who is saying, look, this is a little bit of who I am as a person. I'm serious, but I also have, you know, a little bit of a fun side. And I don't think it's without risk, because it could potentially open her up to charges that she's not potentially taking this very seriously, because Chicago has a lot of problems that whoever is the next mayor is going to have to confront. You know, it also spotlights her home life. Let's not forget, she would not only be the first female African-American mayor, she'd be the first openly gay mayor.
Right.
And, you know, that's, you know, you never saw Rahm Emanuel's kids in his ads.
Right.
And I think that's just an interesting choice that she made.
Or his wife, too. I mean, it's rare that you see the personal side of it. And I think that really, just as a voter, just as a person, I think that does resonate when you see the families.
I think it does. I think it makes you more likable, more relatable. So I think that it would only serve to soften her.
I think
she already exudes intensity.
Right.
So I think that this would be helpful to her.
Absolutely.
I think it hits the right tone between serious and not serious, and I think it's pretty authentic. I mean, it is actually her dog, her doodle, Hank. It is actually her daughter, and it is actually their home.
Dog. Not a stunt dog or a stunt daughter.
Is that
it is actually her dog. It is Hank.
No kidding.
And so that's...
See, I love that.
Yeah. Whereas Rahm would never... Rahm would get mad
if
somebody...
He'd hire a dog?
Yeah.
Rahm would have hired a dog right. And
then
it would have
a focus group about the perfect breed.
Exactly.
We're getting a golden doodle. That's what we're getting for a dog.
Exactly. How great is that? Okay. Hey, were you guys all of you individually surprised, A, by Rahm saying he's not running again, and B, I know I'm jumping way ahead, but by the fact that it is Lori Lightfoot and Tony Preckwinkle? Did you think we would see this from the very beginning?
So the moment when Rahm Emanuel announced that he wasn't running for a third term, you could just hear the collective intake of breath from the press corps. And it was just a really intense moment that really nobody except Fran Spielman of the Sun-Times, whom I am obligated to credit because she wrote an article saying, hey, he might not run a couple of days before.
Yes.
But it was a really intense moment, and I think that you know, the big question we were talking about at City Hall is we were just sort of speculating, you know, does he wish he had run, knowing how the race has sort of played out? You know, does he think he could have won a third term now? Because I don't think anybody expected Lori Lightfoot to finish first in the first round of voting and sort of to be, you know, perhaps leading at this point 2 weeks out from the vote.
Right, right. I heard someone say it is her race to lose now just because of all the endorsements that she's been receiving. And I know Preckwinkle said there's going to be more forthcoming this week, but it does seem like it's Lori Lightfoot's race to lose. Do you guys agree?
I was shocked by both parts of your question.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I mean, when Emanuel said he was not running, I mean, I was like, wait, what?
Right.
I was really shocked. I didn't think his ego would do that, but looking back on it, maybe just seeing the possibility that he would lose.
Right.
That now I'm like, oh, okay, maybe. And then with Lightfoot, I heard a lot of people just anecdotally saying, I really like Lightfoot, but there's no way she's going to win.
Yeah.
You know?
And now,
that's what
right.
I hear over and over again. So
I was, again, very surprised at that.
Yeah, no kidding. And I ask you the same question, Greg, and I have to have you tell, before we go to the break, your story, too, about your Lightfoot encounter. I know you are covering her now exclusively.
So as far as whether it was, I don't think anybody would have expected that Lightfoot would have been in the runoff without the Burke situation. I think that changed the whole dynamic, because she is, for the purposes of this race, a total outsider. She's not touched by Ed Burke in any way. And so the idea that she would have made the runoff without that, who knows? I feel like I've watched the whole universe of Chicago, the whole Big Bang happen twice, you know, first with Rahm stepping down, which was a shock to everyone, and second with the Burke indictment, which changed everything.
Well, he hasn't been indicted. Sorry, I have to.
With the Burke charges, with extorting a Burger King.
How about we regroup here in about 2 weeks? We'll rediscuss after the election.
Absolutely,
rediscuss the topic. We're talking to Courtney Hall, Gregory Pratt, and Heather Sharone here on Andrea and the Reporters. We'll take a quick break and come back and delve into their backgrounds and find out how they all became reporters. Next on 720 WGN. Thanks for being with us, 723, 720 WGN. Our panel tonight, Heather Sharone, Gregory Pratt, and Courtney Hall. So I want to know how you all decided to become reporters and enter this, I always say, crazy, ever-changing, fun, delightful, you can choose your own adjective, profession. Heather, why don't we start with you?
Well, I grew up in Edgewater, and I read the Sun-Times and the Tribune every day with my dad, and I loved to write, and somehow I got it in my head when I was really, really young that I wanted to cover City Hall.
So you've always been a political junkie.
So I've always been a political junkie. Ah. Now, I assumed Mayor Richard M. Daley would still be mayor by the time I made it to City Hall.
Right.
I didn't quite make it as quickly as history would have it. So it's my dream job. I love it every day. It's the greatest city in the world. I covered politics in Oakland, California, where I covered Jerry Brown when he was mayor of Oakland. And it's pretty crazy there, but it's nothing like it is here in Chicago.
What's the most fun aspect of covering City Hall? What's the funnest part of your job?
I think the sense that what you write has a chance to really sort of shape policy, and that policy really will determine sort of whether people, know what they're getting for their tax dollars and understand how they're being governed.
Yeah.
That's a lot of responsibility, and I feel it, sort of on my shoulders every day. But, the idea that what I write could help people better understand what politicians and officials are doing in their name is a really awesome, important responsibility to have.
Is there anybody at City Hall that surprised you as far as maybe you thought they would be difficult to cover, whether it's an alderman or a city worker or somebody, or even the mayor, if you thought, but they're more human and kind of more delightful than you thought they might be?
So I think, Rahm Emanuel has sort of a persona that he's spent a lot of years crafting as sort of a tough-as-nails guy.
Sure.
But I appreciate how deeply wonky he is.
Yeah.
Like, he is a guy who can get in the nitty-gritty details of, street cleaning or streetlight maintenance. I mean, every once in a while you get the sense that, it occurs to him that he used to work 10 feet away from the Resolute desk in the White House, and now he's being quizzed by a bunch of pack of ugly reporters about, potholes and stuff like that. But he really loves governing, and he really loves policy, and he really loves that back and forth with reporters, and that's a lot of fun.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
I love your stories. We're going to talk more about your past and the Daily Line, and you came from DNA Info, and we'll talk about that after the news. But Greg, how did you decide to become a reporter?
So I always liked writing from the time I was a kid, and so when I went to college at UIC, I just started working for the college newspaper because I had opinions and I wanted everyone to know how beautiful and intelligent my opinions were.
And how right they were.
And how right they were, but mostly how beautiful and intelligent they were. And so I ended up wanting to try journalism for a little bit, and somebody told me that you could file a records request and tell a government, give me some paperwork on whatever, on you're spending on this, give me the paperwork, and they have to, and then you can find things out that they don't want you to know. And I realized after I did some stories that made the university mad that it was a lot of fun to piss people off. And it is
right.
Really, and not just to do it like to be a jerk, but to find something out. Like at the time, UIC was laying people off and raising tuition, and then to find out the ways in which they were wasting money to benefit themselves versus educating students was important, but also fun. And I carry that with me still today.
Did you ever anger someone who came back to you and said, all right, you know what, I got mad at first, but you did the right thing, and hey, buddy, let's go have a coffee.
You'd be amazed how often people, more often than not, people get it. People really do. And I've been doing investigative stories since I was in college. Yeah. I mean, I've done stories that ended up on the front page or on TV, and people will get mad, and they'll huff and they'll puff. But in general, people do know what's right and what's wrong, and they also know that they have to pretend to be mad, or they have to be mad because there's a natural inclination to be mad. But people generally get it. It's sort of like ballet or pro wrestling, where people understand there are steps, and you are on your side and I am on my side, and at some point we'll be able to laugh about it.
Very true. More often than not, anyway. Courtney, what made you decide to become a reporter? We see you every day anchoring CLTV.
Yeah.
We see you on the morning news on WGN-TV. What made you decide to become a reporter?
You know what? I had a totally different career path after graduating from college. I was working at the World Bank in D.C. And I was kind of in that period where, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. But I was in college in D.C. During September 11th. Oh. And I could see the Pentagon on fire from where I was living, and it was such a like powerful, scary moment that it always stuck out in my mind, because our campus was, of course, on lockdown, and all we could do was watch TV news.
Right.
That was it. That, you know, so we were just like hungry for information. We had it on all day. You know, everybody was terrified about, you know, what was happening. So that moment always stuck out in my mind as like just kind of how, you know, I was like in the palm of their hands, like waiting for information from these anchors and reporters who were, you know, giving us very vital information. So it stuck out in my mind how important that job was. And I developed a lot of respect for journalists, specifically TV journalists, in that moment. So, but it didn't click right then and there. I continued on with my marketing degree. But afterwards, I decided when I'm kind of like thinking about what to do, I kind of went back to that moment and said, you know, that's a really important, vital job.
Yeah.
And I want to check it out and see what it takes to do it.
So, was it hard or easy to come back home to Chicago? Was it hard to leave DC and come back to Chicago, or was it great because you were coming back home?
You know, I think at that point I was done with DC. I love DC. I consider it a second home, but you know, you kind of live out those like post college years, like, right, and then you're like, okay, well, this really is over, the party really is over. So everybody was kind of going in their directions for careers, whether it's moving to New York or back home. So I think it was time for me to move back to Chicago, and that's when I went to Medill. That's when I decided, because I knew nothing about reporting. I literally was so where do you start?
Right. And I did not have an internship. You started at Medill.
Yeah, but I did not have an internship. I can't say authentically that I was some sort of news junkie before this moment. I mean, yeah. I would, you know, look at the news and read the paper, but I wasn't, you know.
But you had the life
obsessed
experience.
With it. But I had that experience,
right.
And you know,
watching that building from
watching
where you were
the
standing,
images,
right.
and just being consumed with the information, and just, you know, needing to know more.
Right.
And the whole nation was like that.
Yeah. And you're one of Chicago's very own, so you had to come home.
So right, exactly. So I had to come home.
So you had to come home.
So I'm like, oh well,
here, right,
looks
here
like
I am.
They have a place to learn more about journalism here, so I'll do that.
That's the voice of Courtney Hall. You are listening to our panel tonight. Courtney is joined by Heather Schroen and Gregory Pratt, and we will have more with them and their backstories and best stories they've ever covered after this on 720 WGN.
Let's get back to Andrea Dallas and the reporters on 720 WGN.
Thanks for being with us tonight. Courtney Hall, Gregory Pratt, Heather Schroen, our panel tonight, and we're talking off the air, and I have to bring some of these stories on the air because these are more fun than anything I think we'll ever talk about. We were talking a little bit about, Courtney, you said the last time you were at City Hall, you
right,
were chasing down.
I was amazed
down,
that they
were,
because
like, they're there every day.
They're every day. And, yeah. You know, I'm a house cat now, so I don't get there often to City Hall, but the last time I was there, I was actually stalking Ed Burke because I was working on a feature story about just a look back at the summer of 1966 in Chicago when Martin Luther King moved here, and we had some archival footage that we were going to bring to light and put together in a story. And Ed Burke was a police officer at the time, so we wanted his perspective on it and to talk about the daily administration. And so I sat there all day. I saw you guys, I'm sure I did. Yes. I was sitting there. I was learning how this all works. Where do we sit? Like, you
in
know,
that press room.
In the press room. You know, so it was a different experience and very cool.
And you got the story.
And I got the story. I waited there all day, and finally, you know, I cornered him, and he agreed to do it.
Right. He said, stop stalking me.
Stop stalking me, right? once he learned what it was about, he agreed to do it. And then I remember when I got back to the newsroom, one of the producers was actually working on like a real urgent story, like not my feature. And they're like, well, I don't understand how you got that interview. We've been like stalking for weeks. I'm like, Right. Obviously not really, because I was stalking him all day and he went on camera. So.
That's awesome. I love those stories. And Heather, you said you had a Burke story too.
I do. So it was the morning after the Sun-Times had reported that Danny Solis had worn a wire as part of the investigation into Ed Burke. So, I mean, City Hall was literally a maelstrom because there was a full city council meeting that day. So all of the aldermen were arriving. And as they were getting off the elevators, I was with Fran Spielman of the Sun-Times. And we were sort of catching aldermen as they were walking, onto the second floor for the meeting. And a lot of them were angry at Danny Solis. You know, how could he do this? How could he betray us? Just really just crazy stuff, because, you know, he had participated in a federal law enforcement investigation. And so we, you know, had our, you know, eyes out for Ed Burke. He hadn't been seen yet. And we hopped into an elevator with Alderman Brendan Riley and Alderman Michelle Smith, and we were interviewing them. And the elevator is going up and down City Hall, and people are sort of getting on and off, and we're continuing.
And you're staying on the elevator.
We're staying on the elevator. We're talking about it. And all of a sudden, Michelle Smith's face drains of color. So Fran and I turn, and it was Ed Burke standing framed in the elevator doors. And Fran and I looked at each other, and in the middle of a word Michelle Smith was saying, we hopped off the elevator and we ran after him because he had gone into the next elevator to try to get away from us.
Oh, sure, sure.
So, but we managed to make it onto the elevator with him. So we had him trapped. So we both are, you know, we've both got our recorders in his face, and Fran, who does not mince words under the calmest of circumstances, you know, basically was like, have you been betrayed? Has your friend Danny Solis betrayed you? Are you going to jail because Danny Solis saved his own skin? And of course, Danny Solis has not been charged with a crime, and Ed Burke has said he is innocent. And he says nothing. And he just has this cold, dead stare at Fran. So,
are you in the elevator at this point?
Okay. And so he's not saying anything. So I jump in and I got to try something, right? So the election is like 14 days away or something ridiculous at this point. And I said, well, what do you say, Alderman Burke, to the people who you're asking to reelect you? You know, how do you respond to them asking, you know, what Danny Solis has on tape against you? He says, first of all, nothing Danny Solis could have on tape could implicate me because I have done nothing wrong. And I swear to God, the way he was staring into my soul, I like felt my soul like detach from my body.
It was just
the most intense thing.
Yes.
And then finally, so the door opens.
Oh God, it was probably like the 4-hour long elevator ride,
And then, you know, so he starts to leave, and then Fran says, well, what about your son? Because Greg Pratt had just reported a few days earlier that his son had, you know, been involved in all sorts of shenanigans while he worked for the county, a job that Tony Preckwinkle helped him get. So very, you know, sort of on point. And at that point, he sort of pushed his way out of the elevator and went on to his office. And
wow,
at that point, Fran and I looked at each other and we sort of collapsed into each other's arms. And you can hear us on the tape going, oh my goodness, what just happened?
Heather's going, I want my soul back.
I know, right? And so we're like, wait a minute, that really happened. Like, I didn't just like hallucinate that, right? And she's like, yeah, we got to get back to the press room. And, you know, and then we're, you know, writing it
we
up.
We need a cocktail at this point.
Yeah.
Oh
and
my God.
Everything.
Did he get off the elevator and say, I have a feature to attend to at Courtney Hall? She's been stalking me all day.
I'm going to talk about Martin Luther King. And
his next comments to reporters were after the city council meeting, where somebody asked, you know, are you still going to run for re-election alderman. And he said, not only am I going to run, I'm going to win. And he did.
He did. Yes, he did.
So,
oh my God,
that was a crazy day.
That's a lose your breath kind of a day.
Yes,
big
yes.
time.
And I was with Ed Burke on election night, and he tried to sneak out the back of his campaign office, and no. I literally had to sprint from the front to the back, and I caught him right before he got into his SUV.
And did he talk?
He talked, and he bragged, and he was very happy, and he was sort of making fun without outright saying it of two of his veteran colleagues who lost their re-election yeah. races. And but you know, it's one of the most surreal things. I've got a great picture of me and Ed Burke, we're covered in shadows in the alley with me holding my mic to my my recorder to him.
Oh, that's cool. With Heather's soul kind of lurking
yes.
behind you.
Yes.
I think that was the source
and
of
Courtney saying, I want my feature. I want my feature. You know, you have a habit of meeting up with politicians as they're like making their exit. That happened with you and Lori Lightfoot at the parade, didn't it?
So I followed Lightfoot you know, I actually walked the parade with Lightfoot, the Southside Irish Parade, just this weekend.
On Sunday, yeah.
And we were walking and talking, and I'm watching her interact with people. And then at the very end, because it's a long parade,
yeah.
she gets into a little golf cart to start to zoom away, and it's starting to pick up some steam, and she realizes that I'm going to be stranded if... You know, because there's nobody there for me. And she goes, well, you can come on, Greg. And it's starting to zoom. And then the guy starts speeding up and he starts going faster.
And you're hanging on the golf cart.
And I start to sprint and I catch up to it. And she's like, go ahead, jump, you know. And so I jump onto the back of the golf cart and I grab the thing and I sit there. And I was lucky I didn't fall off. And I said to her, wow, I could have cracked my head open. She's like, no, I would have grabbed you.
Yeah. 5 foot, 4 foot. Yeah. How tall yeah. is Lori?
About my
5 feet
height,
tall.
Right?
Yeah, she's tiny. She's like, very petite.
Yeah, she's barely 5 feet. If
yeah.
she is.
Oh, so I got some height on her.
Right. Yeah. Both of you guys grabbing onto Greg on the golf cart.
And
right?
we were on the back of the golf cart talking about basketball, funny. And she likes basketball. And I said, were you the Muggsy Bogues of your day? And
she oh, good yeah. The D, or the D Brown. Yeah. Yeah.
And she goes, there was no dunking for me.
Oh, that's awesome. We're talking to Greg Pratt, Heather Sharone, and Courtney Hall. Quick break, and we are going to find out the best stories they ever covered. Promise you after this. 720 WGN. 750, 720 WGN. It's Andre and the reporters, Courtney Hall, Gregory Brandt, Heather Sharone, our guests. At 8 o'clock, we have White Sox baseball coming up, but I wanted to ask the panel, all of our journalists tonight, what are the best stories you ever covered or the most impactful, like the story that just really sat with you, maybe it put you on the map, maybe it was just one of your favorites in covering. Heather, why don't we start with you?
Gosh, that's hard.
You can pick more than one. It's okay.
You know, what's interesting about being a political reporter is that you don't always see the impact, right? Because sometimes policies get quietly dropped and sort of, you know, put into a drawer somewhere if they've become a little bit too hot to handle. You know, when I was an intern at the Orange County Register in Southern California, because I grew up here, I went to Northwestern, I wanted to do an internship as far away from my parents as possible, so I ended up in Orange County. I ended up writing a series of articles about children who were basically homeless but lived in the motels around Disneyland that were being torn down at the time to make way for Disney's California Adventure, which of course now is like a whole separate theme park.
Right.
And these families that were basically just on the brink of homelessness were going to be actually homeless because Disney was buying up all of these properties, tearing down the motels and basically displacing them. And I was not even 20, I don't think, at the time. And it was really hard to be sort of learning how to do journalism and to be confronted with kids who were just hungry and scared, and to know that I really couldn't be like, okay, good news, we're going to McDonald's, I'm going to, you know, feed you whatever you need to be fed, and
sure.
we're going to go, you know, to get you some clothes and good shoes. That was really, really hard. And I think that's part of the reasons why I, you know, sort of try to write about policy to help people like that, as opposed to, you know, sort of, I really respect reporters who can get up close and personal and sort of write those feature stories. But yeah, that story has stuck with me for a really long, long time. And, you know, I think of those kids when I think about like affordable housing policy and like gentrification and displacement, which is all issues we've been writing about in the mayor's race. And I think as a reporter, it's really easy to just think about them as sort of abstract concepts. And I tend to see those kids when I write about those sort of issues.
It's very impactful.
Yeah.
That's an awesome answer. Greg, how about you?
So the to cover City Hall every day is an honor and really cool. You know, just by itself, it's memorable. And I bet in 20 years, I'll be like, wow, I was really there when Rahm Emanuel walked out holding his wife's hand to quit. You know, I was there when this and that happened. I was there when Tony Preckwinkle got mad at me for writing about Ed Burke Jr.
It was intense.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so,
a soul losing moment. I'll forever remember that.
But, you know, I think one of the most memorable things I ever did was I spent most of 2017 investigating a wrongful conviction case. And so I visited this guy in prison, right? I interviewed him in prison. I talked to him in prison. I talked to his family. And then I watched him walk out a few months later, you know, after I'd been writing about him. And I watched him walk out of prison after 23 years of being behind bars for a crime he didn't commit. And he held this, and you know, his eyes lit up when he saw me, and you know, he held this press conference. And then after the press conference was over, you know, he reached out and he grabbed my hand and he said, "Thank you, you believed in me." And
wow,
it was one of the most remarkable things I've ever experienced. And actually, I have photos of it because we had a photographer with us, and so that was something I just never forget. And I think about the power of journalism. And then the other thing is I spent all of the previous year, the story that put me on the map really at the Tribune was I just did 56 stories in 1 year about one school district that was running itself into the ground and doing corrupt things. And the superintendent loves his dogs, you know, and so he created a dog training school called Super Dog. And he created this dog training school for his dogs using taxpayer money, and he got indicted for it later. But I was writing about that and all sorts of other crazy things. And now I've got a colleague, Dawn Rhodes, who covers higher education, who every time she sees me and I walk into the newsroom, she goes, "Super Dog."
Ah, there you go. And not the kind I'm walking into Vaughn. Yeah. Thank you, Greg. Courtney, greatest story you ever covered?
Most impactful? That's a hard question, as you guys said. When I was in Florida, I worked in Orlando, Florida. There's obviously like a ton of stories there. But I covered Trayvon Martin. I covered Casey Anthony. I covered SeaWorld, Disney, all of that. I covered this story that you mentioned, Heather, with a follow-up, obviously. But just the homeless children in that area. And so those were hugely impactful. Here in Chicago, I've also, like, one of the most I personally impactful was when, and this is again a feature that I was lucky enough to do, was when I did my DNA testing.
Oh yeah.
That actually I ran my DNA through African Ancestry, and it pinpointed that I am related to Senegalese people living in southern Senegal from the Mandinka tribe. So that was way more specific than I ever thought. So as part of that, I was so fascinated by that. You know, I booked a ticket
to
Senegal.
Did you go to Senegal?
Yeah, I went to Senegal, and I negotiated with our news director, and she said that, you know, they would pay for a crew out there to, you know, at least for a couple of days to follow me around. I had one of my friends from college went with me as well. She did the rest of the camera work, and we did a story on it, like a tracing my roots story. So, and everything kind of fell together in that story, because the story that we did before, I knew I was going to even go to Senegal, was we went to a Senegalese restaurant, met this fabulous person named Badu. And as it turns out, when I told him I was going to Senegal, he said, "You know what? I'm going to visit my family at that exact time so that I'm able to take you around." So he did that. He took me around. He took me to the Mandinka tribe, like where they're all, and it was a town that was, you know, 99% Mandinka people. He's like, you know, if you really think about it, somebody in this town is likely a distant relative of yours.
That's
and
amazing.
It was amazing. So that was the most personally impactful. I'm like,
oh, that's
incredible. And to come back and to put together that story and that experience was just awesome.
Oh.
But then, I've also done stuff like criminal justice and mandatory sentences for, you know, minors or, you know, people under 17. And so, there's so many stories that, you know, I get the feedback like, "Oh, I'm so glad you did that story," or, "Oh, I want to know more about this." And that's why I do this, you know? That's the
You all are inspiring. You're excellent writers. You're excellent storytellers. And I'm just so proud that we all got to be together in the same room so I can hear all your backstories. So thank you. Where can people find you? I wish we had another hour to chit-chat.
We could do it, too.
Yeah, I know. We're just getting started.
Would you guys all come back?
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Yeah. We'll do this again. We'll tell more stories. But for now, where can people find all of you, Courtney?
I'm on Instagram and Twitter. The handle is at Courtney Hall. And Courtney is spelled without a U, so CORTNEYHALL. And I'm on Facebook, and I'm at the United Center, and I'm at WGN. I'm on CLTV. I'm on the streets of Chicago.
Right.
And I'm out and about.
Beautiful. And Gregory, where can we find you?
Well, people can and should pick up the paper and read Chicago Tribune at chicagotribune.com. And I'm on Twitter at Royal Pratt, R-O-Y-A-L. And that's my weird middle name. It is not vanity thing.
Oh, I had no idea.
I thought so.
Your middle name is Royal?
My middle name is Royal. That's awesome. People are like, oh, he's pretentious.
Thank you, Greg. And how about you, Heather?
The Daily Line is thedailyline.net. I'm on Twitter at Heather Sharone. That's C-H-E. E-R-O-N-E. And we do a lot with Block Club Chicago, my former DNA Info compatriots. So we help them with political coverage there. So you should check out Block Club Chicago as well, because they also co-publish the Daily Line's political stories.
Thank you all for coming in. And you can hear Heather, Courtney, and Greg on our podcast, WGNRadio.com, and we will have that up after the program. Thank you guys for telling your stories.
Thanks for having us.
White Sox baseball's next on 720 WGN.